Today's daf in Masechet Beitzah. This is one of those rare occasions where we start literally at the very first word of the daf. This is daf Lamed Vav, which is a nice way to begin Rosh Chodesh. Daf Lamed Vav Tzadikim, Lamed Vav Shois of the Aragonos, Lamed Vav Neiros Chanukah. Fantastic. All right, may it be a light for us and for Kol Yisrael. So, says the Gemara like this. It's coming out of nowhere. We're asking another question. Yesterday we were talking about the Mishnah. The Mishnah says you're allowed to throw things down through a skylight if there's rain that's coming, that's going to ruin them. And the question that we have is that there's something similar when it comes to Shabbos. Of course, we had discussed that yesterday because we were trying to figure out whether there's any limitation. And we were looking at the differences between Shabbos and Yontev, and we introduced like a lot of issues that are different between the two cases. The case in Shabbos was we needed to move things around because it was for a mitzvah, for Talmidim that were coming for a shir or for Achlas Asorchim on Shabbos. Marshein came over here, it's just to save money. Or on the other hand, we could say saving money is more reason to be Mekel. And then we had the issue of whether maybe we should be more machmer on Yontev because people are more likely to be Mekel, or maybe we should be more Mekel on Yontev because Shabbos is an Isser of Skila. So all of those things we talked about yesterday. And meanwhile, we're thinking, you know, there was another issue that was introduced over there in the Sugya of Shabbos about moving things away in order to create room for the Shir. It said over there, which we quoted briefly, so you can move things around, you can take some big boxes, even though you're normally not allowed to, but you can only do that if it's not the end of what's on the floor. But if taking out those final boxes is going to expose the floor on the area where you had stored thing, then you're not allowed to. Why is that? What does it mean? Obviously, it doesn't mean you're not allowed to take boxes out of an area of storage. I mean, why would that be? It means not to completely open, empty the otsar. That's what it means. Lo yigmar otsar kulo. Why is that? Because if you empty out a storage area, you're going to expose the floor. And if you expose the floor, so then you're likely to see maybe an area that needs smoothing out, and you'll come to be mashva gumot, which if it's indoors is a question of binyan, if it's outdoors is a question of harisha, and therefore in order to avoid an issur d'oraita, so we told you over there in Shabbat, you're not allowed to uncover the floor. Now the question is, again, interrelating the sugya and Shabbos of Mefanim with the sugya in Yontav of Meshilin, oh my gosh, I just remembered I never finished the other daf. Yikes. Okay, we'll go back to them. I'm so sorry. I forgot that I had to run out yesterday. Forgive me. Please remind me when we finish the daf to go back and to do that, and then we'll have Benny connected to. Yikes. How come nobody opens their mouth around here unless nobody even notices? Maybe nobody listens. Maybe we're just here watching Sesame Street. I don't know.
Still in the middle of davening, so we don't open our mouths. It's late.
Yeah, right. Okay, so the question is, again, the factors that we raised yesterday, we raise again. It's possible. And the question over here is, when you're moving all the stuff through the skylight and the roof, are you allowed to uncover the actual surface of the roof? Or are we cheshit over there also for the problem of Ashviya Gumais? What are the issues? Well, like we said, maybe on Shabbos, where the Isser is more chamor, so we're more makbit. Avon Yomtev, the keel, it's not an Isser Skila. So over there, we'd allow you to move everything down the skylight. Or maybe just the opposite. Or Dilma, like we said yesterday, that over there, when it comes for Shabbos, and over there, the reason that I'm moving it is the Tzorech Mitzvah, because without it, Ika Bitu Bet HaMidrash. And even so, you said you're not allowed to uncover the floor. So Kol Shekein over here, where you're only trying to save the guy money, and there is no problem of Bitul Beit HaMidrash, Lo Kol Shekein, isn't it obvious that we would not be allowed to uncover the floor? Okay, so again, we don't know exactly how to balance out There's multiple directions we could go, and we're not certain what way to take into consideration the different elements in terms of the Gezeirah de Rabbanan. Okay, now we have another issue in the opposite direction. Whether the things that we have in our Mishnah can be applied to the issue of Mefanim and Shabbos. Up until now, we've been trying to derive the issues from Mefanim onto Yontem. Let's take a look at it in the other way. Hochatzin in our Mishnah, it says that you're allowed to throw the perot down through the Aruba V'yom Tov. And Reb Nachman said over here, V'yom Reb Nachman, when we said you can do that, you can only do it if you are on the same roof that has the skylight on it. So let's imagine a building. We have different homes under the roof. And you have your stuff is right on top of your roof. And the guy next door has a skylight, which is on exactly the same level as your roof. As a matter of fact, it's 1 inch away from the end of your roof, right? And nonetheless, Reb Nachman said, they were only matu you to put it down through a skylight in the same roof. You cannot move it from one roof to another roof. You can't move your peiros from one roof to another, even if it's mamish on the same level. So that makes it obviously if one is higher and the other one is lower, so over there you could say, I can't go to extra trouble. Over here, it's no extra trouble. Afa pike. The heter was only when the guy... I'm sorry here. So the heter was only kishigagoteyem shavim. What about over there? Can you move, let's say you have a shear up on the roof, and you have to move boxes away in order to have room for people to sit. Are you allowed to move from one roof to the other to get place for your guests or for your talmid? So what are the questions here? Again, same questions that we raised yesterday. Maybe only over here we made the Yisra on Yontev, because since once we give people a finger when it comes to Yontev, they're liable to be more makel and take a hand, because people in general are more makel on Yom Tov, because Yom Tov, like we said, is something that you're allowed to do Urchel Nefesh. So people like sort of end up becoming a little lenient in issues of Yom Tov. But maybe by Shabbos, where people are very machmer and they're not going to come to be makel just because we allow you to move to a different roof, and they're not going to come to be mezalzel. So maybe what's the difference to us? So move it to the other roof. Odilma. Maybe we should say the other direction that we said about the monetary laws, that you're not even allowed to move it, where you may lose the peirot on the gag. So over there, where we didn't allow it in order for you to save money, then awesome, the leka have said peirot, we allowed it for the fact that you need to have room. So lo kosher kein, if you're not going to have the concern of the hefsed momain, so for sure we're not going to be allowing it. So as you can see, we took every one of these factors over the course of the last three issues that we raised, and we examined them in both directions. Each one of them was examined in both directions in order to establish how we take them into consideration in the definition of the Gezeiros. Okay, one last issue. Which is also in the same direction. Namely, do we have the same dinim that we applied over here to our Mishnah of Mashilim? Do we apply them also to the sugya of Mefanim and Shabbos? So over here, there's a braita that says that when you're, even though it says Tanan, it's a braita, I should say Tanya. So here it says, even though we allowed you to throw them down through a skylight, you cannot allow a moving your raisins by putting them in packages and lowering them through a window. So in other words, imagine a situation where you do not have a skylight on the roof. You have an adjacent wall on your roof. There's a window in the wall that goes down to the living room, that goes to the chutz or whatever. So all you want to do is lift it up 3 inches and take the raisins and lower it down the window. That you can't do. V'lo yiridem derech sulamot. Or what you want to do is go down the fire escape. Carry it down. No. Can't do that either. Lo yiridem derech sulamot. You're not allowed to go down with ladders or with stairs or even with a ramp, says Rashi. All those things are called sulamot in the broadest sense of the term. So now the question is, when it comes to Shabbos and Mefanim, over there, would we allow you to do that and to be Mefana even through a window or to carry it up or down a stairs? What, again, are the issues? Once again, let's review. The reason, perhaps, that we said it's usher is because there's no involvement of a mitzvah. There's no bito beis hamedrash. But maybe for Shabbos in the Sugya Mefanim, where there is a bito beis hamedrash, maybe over there, ein achinami, we have to be careful not to be mevatel the beis hamedrash, and we'd allow you to even move it through a window or down the stairs. Or maybe we should look at it in the opposite direction. Oh, Dilma. Over here, where we have the hefset of the peres, and so there's a monetary loss, and even so, we weren't materin. So over there, where there is no hefset peres, then for sure we wouldn't be materin. All of these issues remain a teku, because in the Gezeres Rabbanan, it's very often difficult for us to establish what it is that the Beis Din saw in terms of the intricate interrelationship between the various elements of a determination of a Gezerah. It's difficult for us to reconstruct and to be certain that that's the way that the Gezerah was made. And because of that, we leave it standing. Okay, what's the next piece in the Mishnah? So the next piece in the Mishnah said, you're allowed to cover over the perot if there's rain dripping on it. And Ula says, that's true even on Avira de Livne. So if you have, let's say, a pile of bricks, and you had set aside these bricks for using, for binyan, and now they're going to be ruined. Why are they going to be ruined? Well, they're not going to be totally ruined, but the problem is that in order to build, you need to have dried materials. The reason is that if you try to use cement on bricks that are soaking wet, the cement is not going to stick. So because of that, you're going to delay your building project if these bricks get wet. It could take you another month until they dry out properly. So therefore, you're allowed to put a tarp over it, even though this thing is not movable, because Avira de Livne isn't movable on Yontif. Nonetheless, you're allowed to cover it. So you see that we hold, this was a sugya we discussed also in Masechet Shabbos, whether you're allowed to move a something which isn't muktzah in order to protect something which is muktzah. So that was a machlokas. There were some who paskened, such as Rabbi Yitzchak, we were about to discuss, that ein davar nital, ela letzorech davar hanital. So you're not allowed to be notel even a kli, unless it's for the purpose of something which is itself allowed to be moved. So apparently Ula, what Ula is telling you is that if you're allowed to move a tarp over building materials, so obviously he's not concerned. He believes that the halacha is that you're allowed to move something to protect even a dover hamukta. Masha inkein Reb Yitzchak Amar, only peirot are mentioned in the Mishnah, because peirot are re'uyin. You're allowed to use them and move them on Yantav. This is Reb Yitzchak l'shitato, because remember, Reb Yitzchak said, ein kli nital, ela ladavar hanital b'shabbat. You cannot move something, even though it's a kli, you cannot move it unless you're moving it for the purposes of protecting something that is itself movable. Says the Gemara, it seems from the Mishnah that Rabbi Yitzchak is absolutely correct and that Ula is wrong, because the Mishnah says, mechasinet ha-peirot bekelim. I mean, why would the Mishnah specify peirot? If the halacha is that you do not need the heter of a dover hanita, I mean, it makes more sense, doesn't it, to tell us a bigger kiddush? And then we would say for sure peirot. So I mean, it should say, you know, mechasimet ha-levenim. So mashma dafke peirot, but enochinami, the avira de livne, you would not be able. Says the Gemara, not necessarily. You know why? Because the truth is that it might be that Ula is right, and that you'd even be allowed to spread a tarp over construction materials. But hu adin afilo avira de livne. But I did it on a resha, mashilin peirot, m'tanenami seifu mechasinet ha-peirot. the first part of the Mishnah, we had to say Perot, because you're certainly not allowed to pick up these bricks or lower them through the skylight, because then you're handling the Muktzah itself. So there, for sure, we had to talk about something that was roy to use. So because of that, so we Memela talked about the water dripping, whether you could cover them as opposed to dropping them through the skylight if you don't have a skylight. Okay, but it, not necessarily can you be Medayik that only Perot and not construction materials. All right, says the Gemara, maybe not from there, but let's learn the rest of the Mishnah. It says, V'chein kadayayin, v'chein kadayshem. And now we're coming to add things, right? Now we're coming to focus not on the things that you were dropping down, but rather things that you're protecting. So it's saying over here, not only can you spread a tarp over Perot, but you can also spread a tarp over barrels or pitchers of wine and oil, despite the fact that not that much damage is going to happen to them because you're going to be able to move them out right away after Yontav, and they're not permanently damaged. You dry them off. The peros are going to actually rot if they're exposed to all Shabbos. So, fine. So now, it says over here that Dafka Kadayayim v'Kadayi Shemen, but here it should certainly have added that you can cover building materials, right? So why does it kadayayin? Ah, no, it's talking about kadayayin that are muktzah. What? Yeah, they're full of wine and oil that's tevel. So you wouldn't be able to use them on Yontav. And even though they're not mamish muktzah, remember, because we said before that tevel is called muchan, but meanwhile they're not usable until somebody was over the isser, right? So it's coming to tell me the din of kadayayin that are teva. Okay, so therefore, you're right. The Mishnah does specify things that are not movable, according to Ula. So that's the way Ula would understand it. And therefore, it is not a riot to Rabbi Yitzchak. Actually, don't think that Ula is just giving you something to, you know, a red herring. It makes a lot of sense that it's talking about teva. Because what do you think? If you believe that when the Mishnah spoke about kadayayin and kadayshemen, it was talking about that was mutter, meaning that it wasn't tevel. So what's the difference between the peirot that it said in the first part of the Mishnah and the kadayayin and kadayshemen? Why not? Of course you could. So there's got to be some extra chiddush over here. What do you think the extra chiddush is? I'm telling you what the extra chiddush is. Even though it's tevel and you're not allowed to use it for yontim, that nonetheless you're allowed to move it. Must be. No, says the Gemara, not must be. There's another way to understand it. It could be that even though it's not tevel, there's still a chiddush of kadayayin v'kadayshemen. Because, look, I might have thought if you didn't bring kadayayin v'kadayshemen, that the Mishnah is telling you when you're allowed to be toreach for the loss and be meishil de perot, that is only because it's hefsed meruba. So perot are going to be exposed to dripping water. By the time yontav is over, they're going to be rotten. So because of that, your mom is going to lose everything. So therefore, we were moderate. But maybe lehefsed mu'at, a little bit of damage to the perot. I mean, how much is it going to be damaged, the barrel? It's not going to be so bad. You're going to just move it out of the way after yontav, so okay, it'll take a little bit of time. They'll be stained, whatever. Kamash malan, even a smaller loss. Efshin muat. Maybe that's the chiddush, but who's to say that the chiddush is dafka to tell me, like Ula is claiming, that even if it's muktza, maybe not. Maybe Rabbi Yitzchak is right, and if it were muktza, then you wouldn't be allowed to move the tarp to cover it. Okay, says the Gemara. How about the last piece? The last piece says in the Mishnah that you're allowed to take a bucket and put it under a dripping roof, right? Now, that water that you collect from the dripping roof is, I mean, normally it's filthy. Nobody's going to be drinking it, in which case it's basically muktzah. And nonetheless, it's saying that you're allowed to put it there. So how are you allowed to put it there for a tzorech water that it is not actually potable water? So apparently Ula is right. And you do not need to have something that is roi in order to move a kli for it. Says the Gemara, not necessarily. I mean, Rabbi Yitzchak would say it's talking about a delaf ha-ra'ui, obviously. It's talking about dafka dripping water off of a very clean roof, and it's coming through a clean. And it doesn't mean you would drink it, but you could certainly give it to the cat to drink, and the cat would be happy to drink it. So what's the problem? You could see on Gavi's face, he's planning on using it himself. There's got to be a cat right out the door. Okay? So therefore, it would not be a raya to Ula. So now we don't have a raya from the Mishnah. Do we have a raya to either Ula or Reb Yitzchak from a braisa? Tashma. Porsin machatzelet agabi levenim b'shabbat. It says, beferish, you're allowed to spread a tarp over bricks that are sitting out there. I'm assuming they're sitting out there to be used for building purposes. So it's basically telling me you're allowed to move a tarp in order to protect construction materials, which is exactly what Ula said, and it's a raya against Reb Yitzchak, because you're not allowed to move construction materials. Answers the Gemara, according to Reb Yitzchak, and who's to tell me then when it says you can spread it over bricks, they're construction materials. Maybe they're leftover construction materials. And remember what we said before? If you have bricks that were left over, everybody is mited that that's considered to be not muktzah. Why? Because the norm is that people will pick those up to sit on instead of getting themselves dirty. And therefore, they're considered to be mukhan for use on Shabbos and Yontif. And even according to Reb Yitzchak, of course you could spread a tarp because they are a davar hanital. Okay, let's take a look at another braisa. Tashma. Porsin machtzelat agabe avanim b'shabbat. Now, come on. I mean, here it says you're allowed to take stones. I mean, stones are not usually mentioned unless they are piled up for building. So what are you going to say over there? People don't leave the stones around. No, when it says stones, it's not talking about building stones. It's talking about bathroom stones. So remember, you're allowed to have these avanim kurzalot. They used to use stones, actually, for cleaning themselves after defecation. So those avanim kurzalot, which are sharpened edges, those are chazin lebet hakisei. And since they are used, remember the Rabbanan specifically, because of Kavod HaOdam, allowed you to be metaltel avanim kurzalot because you need them. So because of that, they are not muktzah. And so even Reb Yitzchak would agree that in order to protect them from the rain, you could put something over them, put a piece of plastic over them, and that way they're not going to be unusable on Yontif. Tashma. Okay, I got another raya, I think, to Ula. Here it says, Porsi machatzel lagabi kaver devarim b'shabbat. You're allowed to spread a tarp over a beehive if it's very hot, so you could spread it over to protect it from the sun, so it's getting too hot in the beehive, or if it's raining, you can protect it from the rain, as long as you do not have kavana to trap the bees. Now, a beehive is muktzah, because, I mean, it's there for the bees, it's not for you, and therefore, even Alibet Rabbi Shimon, it ought to be something that is set aside, Alibet Rabbi Shimon, for completely other purposes, in which there's no, even Rabbi Shimon would be made that it's not usable. So how come you're allowed to put something over it, according to Rabbi Yitzchak? Seems to be a clear raya to Ula. No, says the Gemara, what makes you think that we're talking about a beehive for bees? You forgot that humans are so selfish that they take those poor beehives and they use them and steal all the honey. So it's talking about a beehive with honey in it, in which case it's mukhan. And therefore, you're allowed to spread it even according to Rabbi Yitzchak in order to protect the kaveret so that the people can get the honey. Not that we're so concerned for the bees. Omar le ravukva mimeshen le ravashi. Now, wait a minute. We were talking about summertime, wintertime. It says if it's very hot, you're allowed to protect the beehive. If it's pouring, you're allowed to protect the beehive. Now, I understand that during the summer, there's honey in that beehive, and therefore, you could say you got to protect it for the people's uses. But what are you going to say about the winter? There's no honey in the winter, so the bees are dormant. So what are you going to say? How am I suddenly allowed to move a tarp to protect something that I'm not able to move itself and use on Shabbos and Yontem? Aha! A raya to Ula against Reb Yitzchak holds ein kli nital, ela letzorech davar hanital, right? No. Because remember, even during the winter, there's always a certain amount of honey that any bee raiser is going to make certain is available, or he's going to destroy his hive. You need enough honey to get the larvae through the winter. So lo nitzurch ela lo otan shtei chalot, even in a large hive, we always have to leave the last two chalot are there for the bees. And that's certainly muktza. So again, it's saying over here, didn't it say that you could protect it from the rain? Okay, so we're talking about the winter time during the rainy season, right? So apparently Ula is right. During the rainy season, it's not meant for people, it's meant for bees. And nonetheless, it says you're allowed to move it. So apparently, Rabbi Yitzchak is wrong. And says the Gemara, no, Rabbi Yitzchak will tell you that it's because you have those two last challahs that's edible, and therefore you can move it. What are you talking about? Nobody in his right mind would eat that. Otan shtei challot muktzotein. Those are bedavka set aside. I mean, that's considered to be even chisar and kiss. If you end up eating those two last challot, then you end up ruining the kaveret. The hive is gone if you do that. So how could you tell me that you're allowed to move it? What kind of answer is that? Those are muktzah. I thought Rabbi Yitzchak said you can't move something that's muktzah. Okay, it's talking about over here, says Rabbi Yitzchak, that the guy decided that he's not continuing to raise these bees and he's going to eat the last two beehives. What can you, the last two chalot? So that he decided before Shabbos. So how come I ask Kinnashikishev Alayim before Yantav, before Shabbos? And because of that, they're not muktzah. Therefore, I agree. In this case, you could certainly move the tarp. Wait a sec. So in other words, you're telling me that the only case that you're allowed to move it is the strange case where somebody decides that he is going to ruin his hive. I mean, that's a pretty weird case. Now that would mean that it would be easy to distinguish and to say, Bamed Vorim Amurim, when are you able to do this? Only Kishechishev Alayim. But if you weren't Chishev Aleihem, then you're not allowed to do it, right? We could have done that. And instead, you know what the Braisa does in order to indicate a case where you're not allowed to eat the move for the beehive? Instead, it says in the Braisa, Ubilvad shelo yitkaven letzut, as long as you didn't have in mind to trap the bees. So instead of saying, moving on to a totally different issue. I mean, we have not been discussing trapping. We've been discussing moving tarps for muktzah. Now, what do we got to introduce a new issue of trapping? You could easily make a distinction, and you could say, "Atatanya b'vad shloit kaven letzud." If you're looking for a case where it's usher, so instead of saying that as long as you didn't decide to trap the bees, you could have simply said, without moving on to seida, Liflugman, listen, Benidah, you could have made a difference in the dinim of muktzah itself. And you could have said, Bamed Devarim Amurim, Shechishev Aleihem. But Lo Chishev Aleihem, it would be Aser. That's all. And then that would be a beautiful indication. It's very good. Moshe Forman is also here from far away on Rosh Chodesh because there's something in the Gemara that's very Nogeah him. So I want to make sure he stays up. You hear that, Moshe? Stay up. Even though it's the middle of the night for you. Ubilvad, so instead of saying that, you could have simply said, Liftok Velisabidia, Bamed, Varma Murim, when are you allowed to do this, moving a tarp that's Tafka Shechishevalayim? Avalochi Shevalayim would be answer. No, that's no kasha, because the Braisa wants to point out that you've got another problem. It's not, what do you think? The Braisa has to tell you a Bamed Varma Murim. What is this need to tell you about Medvar Mamurim? I don't have to tell you about Medvar Mamurim. I want to point out to you that you must take into consideration a serious problem whenever you're going to cover a beehive with a tarp. That's all that I'm telling you. So, Bemela, even in a case where you were Chishev Aleihem and everything is fine, and now you think that the world is open lefanecha and you're able to cover this beehive, not so fast, buddy. Because if there's any tzad that you're going to be mechashev on the bees, so then you're not going to be allowed to do anything. So bevachlo is kavalatzud. What's so bad about my telling you that? Okay, so then that means that we need to work it out, according to Rabbi Yitzchak, a crazy case where we're talking about a wintering beehive where somebody decided he's finished with bees. I don't know, maybe he ran out of those special injections, but whatever. I mean, okay, so obviously, you weren't ready to say, look, Rabbi Yitzchak, I mean, is going like Rabbi Shimon. I mean, that obviously we're saying Rabbi Yitzchak is going like Rabbi Yehuda, and it's Muktzah, and you're not allowed to move something because it's Muktzah, right? So now you're saying that the whole thing is going to leave it to Rabbi Yehuda to slay Muktzah. So excuse me, I'd love to hear how you can justify, if Rabbi Yitzchak's hold of Rabbi Yehuda, how do you justify the fact that in the Sefer it says, as long as you don't have kavana to trap the bees. What do you mean you don't have kavana? According to Rabbi Yehuda, even if it's a davar she'ena miskaven, it would still be usher. So what good would it do you not to have kavana to trap the bees if you're going according to Rabbi Yehuda? Ha ha! So anyway, you've got a problem over here. That's going like Rabbi Shimon, who holds a davar she'ena miskaven is mutter. All right. Sure. According to Rabbi Shimon, as long as you say, I have no intention to trap the bees, you can go right ahead and trap the bees. You can't do that. That's a psik ratio. It's also even according to Rabbi Shimon. So anyway, you're going to have to explain what the heck is this Brisa talking about, since Kavana never defines the heter. So however you're going to explain it, I'll leave it to Rabbi Shimon. You can explain it, I'll leave it to Rabbi Yehuda, my dear friend. And therefore, v'tizbra. I mean, so what do you think? It works out according to Rabbi Shimon. Didn't Abaye v'Rava d'Amar Tarvayo that Rabbi Shimon is always going to be made on a psik ratio v'lo yamut over here? If you're going to cover the beehive, then obviously you trap the bees. It doesn't help for you to say to the bees, don't worry, little bees. I have no intention of trapping little bees. It's exactly the same thing. So therefore, I say it works out perfectly well according to Rabbi Yehuda, and we'll say the same answer that we would have said, of course it doesn't mean as long as you don't think about trapping bees. It means don't even think about trapping bees. Meaning, make sure that you leave the escape hatches open. That's what it means. So, Leolam Kula Rabbi Yehudahi, Valkamai Eskina, Deet Bekavi. It has little windows in the sides of the beehives. The beehives can come in, the bees can get in and out through the windows even when you cover the door. And there's even a blinking sign that says emergency exit and so on. So, as long as the tarp doesn't cover the emergency exit, so then you're not being Mechavim. So, that's what it means. So, I'm not even thinking about trapping the bees. And therefore, lo tema l'Rabbi Yehuda, and don't say b'vatcho yitkaven l'tzur. It doesn't mean as long as your intentions are different. It means don't even think b'vatcho lo yasenu mitzuda. Don't turn this into a trap. Well, I should hope not. I mean, what are we, insane? Everybody knows that there's an iser tzeda d'oraisa. How in the world could we have thought otherwise? I mean, what do we need to tell me a big chiddush? You're not allowed to trap the bees. Pshita. No, it's not. Huh? No. Because how do you know that Seda would apply to species that are not generally trapped? You see? So I would have thought, the din of Seda is only where something is usually trapped. But to trap something which is not a norm is not considered to be a malacha. Because that's usually the case. When you do something where that's not the tzura of the malacha, so then that's not what the Torah answered. So you would have thought that the concept of tzeda applies only to those things that are used through tzeda. But shalo b'mino nitzod, if the whole species is never nitzod, it would be okay. Therefore, kamash malan, even bees you have to be careful about and not bitzat. Rav Ashi says, you know, you guys are torturing yourselves for absolutely no reason, coming up with all of this craziness of the last two challos and how's it going to work out. And man, oh man, the whole question was a ridiculous question. What was the question? The question was, well, it says you're going to protect it from the rain, so it's got to be the winter when there are no honey. What, it only rains in the winter? Did it say anything about summer, winter? No. It said sunrise, sunset, but it didn't say, it said rain or shine. Now tell me, rain or shine has to be dafka. Rain means winter, shine means summer. No, it could be talking about in the springtime, in the fall time, where it could be rain or shine. And in both of those periods, you have plenty of honey. Whoever said anything about summer and winter, you jump to a conclusion. Mikatani b'imota chama b'imota geshamim. Did it say winter and summer? It said you can protect them from the sun, and you can protect them in the rain from the rain. That's all it says. Now, there can be rain or shine either during Nisan time or during Tishrei time where you have both chama. you have geshamim, and you have lots of honey besides those two challahs tfash. Why don't we keep things simple? Okay, so that's what we're talking about over here. It's not muktzah. It has nothing to do with Rabbi Yitzchak. Thank you very much. Now let's move on. Okay, so the next thing that we had in the Mishnah is that you're allowed to take a kli, and you're allowed to put it under dripping water. Not only that, says the Braita, if it filled up in 5 minutes, you're still allowed to take that bucket, pour it outside, and then run back in and put it back down again. Im nitmalea kli, shofech v'shomeh, and you can do this all day long. Ve'eino nimna. We're not limiting the number of times that you can keep catching that water. So it's okay. And as a matter of fact, there was a maisa where the Beirei Chaim of Abaye had this big room where he used to do all of his grinding, and he had a number of different sizes of millstones and everything in there, and water was coming in there, was filling up the whole room, and he was going to lose all of his very expensive millstones over here because they were all different, but why would they be ruined? Either they were attached with materials that would be ruined, or they were the type of millstones that included hardened ground materials, whatever. Anyway, so he runs over to Rabba's house, tells him, oh my God, what am I going to do? So Rabba tells him, it's a very simple idea. Take your bed, move your bed into the garage where the millstones are, and then it will become your bedroom. Now, nobody likes having millstones in their bedroom. So then the millstone would have a din of a giraf shorei. Because anything that's disgusting to you, you're allowed to move out. The rabbanon would never assert muktzah if it's something that turns you off. That's the reason that you're allowed to move that chamber pot out, right? So that's the giraf shorei. And then move out the millstones. So Abaye says, I don't know, you know. Yosef Abaye sits down. Moshe Foreman, and he's wondering, I don't know, should I be Semech? I mean, Rabba seems to have ignored something. He's telling me I can move my bedroom in there. I mean, isn't that the same din as Osim Garav Shorei L'Chatchila? I mean, you're not allowed to put yourself in a position where now you've created a need to move something out. So we don't use that as a heter. So why did he tell me I should do it? I'm not really so sure I should do it. Then there's this gigantic explosion, and the entire garage collapsed, and that was the end of much worse than he thought. So Abaye said, I deserve that, because instead of sitting around thinking, is he right, is he wrong, I should have just listened to him. So tasteily, there should be a kapura. That the Avri Ademar, I was sitting around figuring out why it shouldn't be right instead of simply going ahead and doing what I was told to do. Omar Shmuel. Giraf Shorei, the Avit Shomei Meraglaim. Now, basically, there's no difference between a Giraf and an Avit. It's just that we call them by different names. So the something that's used, a chamber pot that's used for excrement, is called a Giraf. And a chamber pot that we use for urine is called an avit. Mutter lohotzian l'ashpa, you're allowed to take them out. This was gufa, the din of giraf shorei. Ukishum achziro, he wants to bring it back into the house, obviously, but you can't bring something disgusting into the house. You need to fill it with water. So then it's more like a toilet. So now it's filled with water. And that, kishum achziro, noten bo mayim umachziro. So that, at least, it's not completely disgusting. And now I have water in there that I could give to the cat and the dog. So because of that, I'm allowed to, they weren't makbid at kedei kach. So to take it out, you're allowed to take it out without any kind of heter. But to bring it back in, you need to at least ameliorate the problem of bringing something that is disgusting and muktzah into the house. Now, he thought, sovermina, those who were listening thought that that means a giraf means dafka a giraf, meaning that you're only allowed to move it because it's inside of a chamber pot. You know, it was in today's news. It's the craziest thing. It always goes according to the Daf Yomi. So this morning's news, they just discovered in a beautiful mansion. Oh, Parnea's got the, already has the news. They just discovered a beautiful toilet, a real toilet in this mansion, that a working toilet that had been carved out of this enormous limestone thing. And so apparently not everybody needed to use a garaf shel ra'is. If you could afford a mansion, oh, you have a picture of it. Wow, look at that. Alon's got a picture.
A Malchi Yehuda.
Wow.
An administrator from the Malachi.
Wow, we. Okay.
The context of what it's in.
Uh-huh. Amazing. Okay, so right for our sugya. So anyway, if you're going to move the garaf shel ra'i in, you got to fill it with water. So what we thought anyway was that it's only through moving the pot. You're allowed to move the pot, but you wouldn't be allowed to move something disgusting. Let's say you got a dead mouse or something. You wouldn't be able to move something disgusting by actually touching it. But b'fnei atzmo lo. Tashma, says the Gemara, let's take a look. It says, we know that there was a mice of a mouse that was found, ishtakach beis parmiki, the Rav Ashi was found in the spice bins of Rav Ashi. And Rav Ashi said to them, will you grab that thing by its tail and get it out of here? Nakta betzutzita v'avkua. So you see that it's mutter, even a garaf shel ra'i is mutter, even if you're coming into contact with the thing that is disgusting itself. And now it's time for our kapitan.
Really? Yes. Since Rashi said that the bricks can be nimuach from the rain, couldn't Rashi be learning that they were dried mud bricks?
Mm-hmm.
That's why.
But anyway, we would have to come on, in the case of the avonim, that they're being wet, as Rashi does. So fine, yeah. In both cases, it would make sense. Okay, ready, Sir Richard.
Wait, is this the end of a perek?
Sorry?
Isn't this the end of a perek, or is it the end of a Mishnah?
It's the beginning of the next Mishnah.
Next Mishnah, okay. So, Chelek Mishnah.
What happened to your sonar?
Yeah. Doing a deep dive.
As long as I don't hear the dive horn, you know, before you say that. Okay. Kosher chayavin alav mishum shvut. Now, this mission is a little bit strange, and I just want to tell you the language that we're going to be using. What the Mishnah is going to present to us is three levels where the chachomim assert things. And this follows what it is that we've been talking about, because we've been talking about isurim that are shvut isurim, meaning that they're gzeres derabanan, where we were ready to go easy on you because you need it for a mitzvah. Namely, you need it in order to be able to have your guests on Shabbos, your talmidim to come to the shir, or because of monetary issues, and so on. Now, because of that, this Mishnah is really a continuation. We've seen many times that the Seder of the Gemara is to intricately introduce the various elements that might be taken into consideration in a Shvus Terabbanan. What this Mishnah wants to do is to point out that there are three levels of Shvus. There is Shvus, please mute yourself. There is Shvus where there's no mitzvah at all that's involved. And over there, it's very easy to understand that the shvus applies across the board. There are shvusim, which would be applied even where there are elements of mitzvah that are involved, such as the case that we had. I mean, you can't, when it's not a mitzvah to have your talmidim sitting down on the roof on Shabbos, but it has an element of mitzvah because you're being Isaac b'mitzvah. And you want to be talking Torah, or because you want to have guests at your table, and you want to have guests. That's not mamish a mitzvah chiyuvit. You must have these guests. You must have these people. But nonetheless, it's a action that is a well-based on the Torah's desire action. So we call that, if you want to contrast it with a true mitzvah, we call that a reshus, meaning HaKadosh Baruch Hu is interested in it. So we have straight out shvus. We have shvus that's applied even in cases where it's considered to be a chosh of a thing that you're doing, which is called reshus. And we even have times where the shvus is applied, where it's literally a mitzvah to do this act. And nonetheless, the rabbanit said, do not do that act, even though that act is a mitzvah gomor, as we've seen. They can be mevatel doing things that are mamash achiev to do. Koshkan, if it's just a mitzvah to do it, and it doesn't have to be done today. I mean, we don't blow our shofar because of that, right? Or we won't carry our lulav because of that. Okay. So the wording of the mitzvah is a little bit misleading because it separates shvusim into shvus, rishus, and mitzvah. But obviously, it doesn't really mean shvus, rishus, and mitzvah. It means shvus, pure shvus, shvus applied even in rishus, and shvus applied even in pure mitzvah. So don't let that fool you, and the Gemara is going to talk that out eventually exactly, so we shouldn't make that mistake. It's a little bit disturbing. So the Mishnah says like this. Anything that you'd be chayav on out of a pure shvus, or out of a shvus that's applied even to a rishus, or out of a shvus that's applied even to a mitzvah that is true about Shabbat, is also true about Yontav, and you're chayav to be careful not to do it. That's what chayav means. It doesn't mean chayav in terms of the onesh. Let me give you examples of what I mean. What would be like a pure shvus, which is not involved in doing anything that is laudable? Well, you don't climb a tree, you don't ride an animal, you don't swim in the water, and as we saw before, you're not supposed to be clapping, you're not supposed to be slapping, you're not supposed to be dancing. The Gemara is going to go through each one of these things and explain why they're usser, and it's going to be going through each one of these things and explaining why we consider them to be not mitzvahs or yes mitzvahs. So have patience till we go through the sugya to the end. V'lo shatin, so we said that, fine. Those are all pure shvus. They don't involve anything particular that we would encourage you to do. Elei mishum rishus. Here is where there's even a shvus on something that are mitzvahs. They're just not absolute chiyuvim. For instance, you're not allowed to be dan adin, even though, I mean, it's certainly a very laudable asik b'mitzvah to be dan adin. You're not allowed to be mekadesh an isha. Certainly a laudable thing, but it's not a mitzvah that is bedavka. You have to be mekadesh this isha. Lo chol tzin, v'lo miyap mina. That's strange. Why not? The Gemara is going to ask, why not? And actually, why isn't kedushin a chiyuv? Again, the Gemara will explain. Then we have things that are mitzvahs and afal pikein or shvusim. So you're not allowed to be magdish something to hegdish. You're not allowed to make an erechin, to say that erechi alai or erech ploni alai. You're not allowed to say something is cherem to the berek habayit. You're not allowed to take off trumas or maisras. And all of these are usher even on yontiv, kavachomer for Shabbos. As a matter of fact, the only difference between Shabbos and yontiv would be in issues that revolve around ochol nefesh and only ochol nefesh. Okay, says the Gemara, let me go through these and figure out what's so bad about doing this. You're not allowed to climb a tree. What's wrong with climbing a tree? Well, we're worried that you might tear off a branch from the tree, which would be an issue d'oraisa. So you got a branch sticking out and you're about to get poked by it. And without thinking, you just pull off the little piece of the branch that's sticking out, then you'll be over on kotzer, an issue d'oraisa. So we make a gezerah to avoid issue d'oraisa, right? What's wrong with riding an animal? Well, if you're riding, you might go outside of the tchum. Now, this is a bit of a problem, says the Gemara, because we don't make gezeras ligezeras, and it must be, therefore, that we can learn from here that the iser tchumim is a d'oraisa, because otherwise, why would we make a gezera for a d'rabbanan? It would be a gezera ligezera. Okay, fine. Change my mind. The reason you can't ride an animal is because we're worried that you may break off a branch from a tree in order to use it as a whip or a goad, and therefore, it basically is out of the same takana about the tree itself. Now, I just want you to know that this is a little bit of a problem because tchumim, according to many Rishonim, including the Rambam, are d'oraisa. They're just not d'oraisa for the 2,000 amas, but they're still d'oraisa from the Yud Beis meal of the Machane Yisrael in the Midbar, and many Rishonim paskin like that. So why did the Gemara have to say, well, it must be some other thing? How come, what would the Rambam do with this Gemara? Why did the Gemara change its mind? It could have said, yes, tchumim are d'oraisa. So those Rishonim that speak about it, the Rambam doesn't speak about it, but argued that it's very unlikely that somebody's going to ride an animal Yud Beis meal. I mean, that is a long way to ride. So, okay, so that we're not chashish, he's not going to realize that he's going out of the tchum. But for 2,000 amas, it's very easy to make that mistake. And as Rashi says, if you're on foot, so then you note the little markers of the tchum that are put on the ground. But if you're riding on an animal, then you're not going to note that. Now, because of this, let's say we're talking about a bicycle. So now, if it's a bicycle, and it's a mountain bike, so then it would be very easy to ride Yud Beis Mil, right? So because of that, there are those who bring the halacha that you cannot ride a bicycle on Shabbos and Yontav, even though you're not doing any malacha, but you certainly do not intend to take a branch and whip your bicycle into shape. So what would be the issue of riding the bicycle? So over there you get into the problem of Shema Yetze Chutz Letcho. Shema Min, okay, so fine. Zer Shem Yachtov. Then we said you're not allowed to go swimming. Why not? Because you might make a tube to swim with. So you'll make this tube, whatever it is you'll use to make the tube, but that'll be a tikkun mana. As we said before, all of that is a gzera shema yitaken kleshir. We're worried that you're going to make yitaken does not necessarily mean only repair. It means you could make something into a kleshir. Okay. Then we talked about, see, these are all things that are pure shvus. They do not involve a mitzvah. Now, the next thing we said, even things that are rishus. So before we tell you why you're not allowed to do these things, I don't understand exactly why they're called rishus. I mean, they all seem to be mitzvahs. So it says, Eloi mishum rishus, lo danim. Isn't that a mitzvah being done? No, because look, there are other people that may be better than you. So ika odif minei. So we're talking about in a case where there is a better judge than you are, has more experience, there's a bigger Talmud Chacham. So over there we assert. So once we, Rashi understands like this, once we assert for those who are not the best, so mamela we assert the activity. And it doesn't matter, even in fact, if you are the best, you still wouldn't be able to be done. However, the Rabbeinu Tam argues on that. And he holds that actually, if you are the best, so then, Eino Chinami, you are, Bedavka, yes, allowed to do it. And that's goofy what the Gemara is coming to tell me. And this Machlokas Rashi in the Rabbeinu Tam goes through the entire sugya, as we'll see. It says you cannot, you cannot be Mekadosh a woman. What do you mean? It's a mitzvah. It's part of Peru Revu, right? Well, what we're talking about over here, where it's a rishus, is where the guy already has a wife, and he already has children, and he was already the kayim, the mitzvah. So therefore, this is a second marriage that is considered to be a rishus. But mashma, again, so according to Rashi, even if he doesn't have a wife, he's still not allowed to because of the general takonis, and some of the cases are asur. However, again, the Rabbeinu Tam says, no, if he doesn't have a wife and a children, so then Eino Chinami, it's a straight-out mitzvah, and the Mishnah is saying that they only asked it Mishum Rishos. But the moment that it would be a mitzvah, they wouldn't have asked the Shvus. So this is a whole different way of understanding the Mishnah. The next case that we have, Lo Chol Tzin V'lo Miyav Mim, that's for sure a mitzvah. Chalitza, Yibum, I don't understand. V'a mitzvah kavi, no, it's talking about that you have an older brother. And the older brother, he's the one that's mechuyev to do the yibum. So therefore, it's not a chiyuv on you, so it's called a rishus. Again, what if you are the older brother? Again, the machlokas Rashi and Tosfos. Then does it switch into mitzvah mode? And this is only rishus, not mitzvah, for which there was no shvus, which is how the Rabbeinu Tam understands the Mishnah. So all of the cases are negeh this machlokas. Kula time amayik, zera shema yichtov. We're worried about in all of these cases because generally people write down a verdict for a din, or they'll write down the fact that this person got chalitza, or they'll maybe write a ksuva for the avama, whatever. So because of that, we're choshesh that you're going to write.